Welcome to today's episode of The Growth System, the podcast that looks at the world of B2B growth through a systems thinking lens. I'm Colin Shakespeare.
And I'm Chris Bayliss.
And today, we're going to do something a little bit different. So we were recently asked to talk at the B2B Sales Innovation Expo in London. And a few people have suggested that it would be great to talk through some of the concepts that Chris talked about on stage on the podcast. So that's what we're going to do today. Now, the talk was really about sales and marketing alignment, which is a topic that regular listeners will be aware that we've covered before. But I think, Chris, your talk had a bit of a different take on things. So why don't you tell us a bit about it?
Yeah, sure thing. So, you know, as you say, we talk a lot about alignment on the podcast. It is very much top of the growth system bingo card. But the talk I did at B2B Expo specifically focused on how to leverage the principle of sort of self-organization in systems, self-organization in teams to drive alignment within sales and marketing. And specifically, it talked about the role of goal setting in achieving this. And I think it's fair to say that it actually got really great response from the audience. You never quite know when you're talking about some of these slightly left-field systems concepts, how they're going to go down with the general audience, but it got a fantastic reception. So excited to kind of share some of those as we go through the pod today.
Yeah. Now, one of the things I remember you sort of kicking off with, where I think people started to really pay attention, was you kind of told a bit of a story that I guess was really useful because it defined what alignment is and is not. And I guess your moment of realization, sort of when the penny dropped for you around alignment. So it'd be great if you could kind of go into that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, this was absolutely a true story. And we had a client, kind of tech professional services client, fantastic customer. You know, they were with us for years and years and years until they got acquired. And this was actually one of the first times I'd met them in person. It was, 5 years ago. And we've turned up at this sort of sales and marketing sync. Is something that traditionally we used to do on Teams, but we all met in London. And just the difference of seeing people around a table, you know, it was that sort of classic Monday morning, staggering in there with a, you know, with a hot coffee, having had, you know, from in my particular case, 4 hours of travel to get there for a 9 a.m. as I live in the back of beyond in the Welsh borders. And we sort of sat there, and there are, I think, five or six people, slightly adversarial, sales on one side, marketing on the other. But everyone's chatting, everyone's super friendly, everyone's talking about their weekends. And I'm like, yeah, amazing. Like, what a great team. But as soon as things got down to business, it all kind of changed a little bit. So, you know, we go around the table and everyone's doing their update. And the head of marketing is talking about how many leads have been created in the last week, how many ebook downloads, webinar signups, contact forms, you know, all the usual stuff, where they're sourced from. And it was clear that clearly there's a lot of great stuff going on. But I was looking at the sales team, and in a way that you just can't see on a screen share, people were just getting bored. You know, hands were going to phones, laptop screens are coming back up, people are fidgeting in their chairs. And this was just this moment for me where I was just wondering, like, why? You know, why is this boring? Surely having lots of MQLs to chase down, to close, you know, to cash some commissions in on, clearly that's what you want, isn't it? Why don't they care? That was my kind of like dawning realization. And if I'm honest, I went to quite a lot of meetings like that subsequently before the penny really did drop for me, which is that all of those great results, supposed great results, I think I should say, weren't really anything of the sort, because the sales team didn't care about ebook downloads, because the sales team wasn't going to get what they needed to get from an ebook download. They had targets to hit. They had targets to hit this month. Webinar attendees, ebook downloads, people that engaged with the content weren't going to get them there. And it just dawned on me that this visually, outwardly, really well-aligned team that gets together, you know, every Monday, that talks all week, that really does genuinely get on well, isn't actually aligned at all. Yeah, they're just playing lip service to each other, going back to their day-to-day roles, and getting on with achieving their own goals and targets. And it just put a light bulb on in my brain that this was so common that people probably didn't even see it for what it was, which is superficial alignment. You know, a regular meeting where everyone gets along, but nothing meaningful actually happens that propels the growth team in one unified direction. And that for me was almost, I guess, a bit of a light bulb moment, because it made me realize that there was a problem to be fixed here that probably most people weren't seeing. And the size of the prize for getting it right, as I subsequently discovered, was pretty substantial.
Yeah, indeed. And just before we get on to the size of the prize, which is pretty substantial, I mean, this really chimes with my experience as well. And being on the sales side, where, I mean, something they might have missed in those early meetings is the reason the salespeople didn't care about the ebook downloads wasn't just because that's probably not going to help us get our target. We actually don't believe that they're real anyway. It's just a number, and like we're quite happy for our nice friend in marketing that we share stories about the weekend with to get paid their bonus or you know, meet their KPI or whatever it is that they need to do, as long as we are not on the hook for actually, you know, exposing the fiction by trying to contact the alleged person who allegedly downloaded the ebook. And you know, I could tell you stories where I've tried to contact someone and who allegedly downloaded an ebook 2 months ago, and in fact they'd been dead for 2 years, and there's not an isolated incident. So misalignment is actually perhaps even deeper than that. But yeah, the size of the prize, I think, was part of what was in the title of your talk at Expo, and I think it was part of the reason that it was such a draw. So why don't we go into that a bit?
Yeah, absolutely. As always, we say there are a lot of studies out there, and there are a lot of stats, but in this particular case, they are actually all pretty well aligned. And it suggests that, to kind of chime with the point that you just made, only 12% of sellers think that MQLs are actually valuable. The data suggests 73% are never followed up on at all, and funny enough, 79% don't convert. And I think that's a really scary set of numbers when you think that is the cornerstone of most companies' marketing efforts. And actually, the point I'm making here isn't actually that MQLs are rubbish and we shouldn't be doing ebooks. It's actually more a point about communication and collective responsibility to organizational goals. I mean, ultimately, this is one of the sort of root issues we get with a lack of sales and marketing alignment, or superficial sales and marketing alignment. And if we can unravel that problem, I genuinely believe that getting this right is the biggest opportunity almost every business has to boost their growth rate. And that everyone listening to this podcast, it's probably the biggest opportunity you've got to effectively get some free growth that doesn't come from spending more money or doing more things or doing different things in terms of your campaign strategy. So, you know, what I talked about really in terms of that sort of size of the prize when we were doing the talk is reflecting particularly into a study by LinkedIn and Serious Insights, as you alluded to. It was sort of the title of the talk, that, you know, this study suggested that in the US alone, the cost of misaligned sales and marketing teams is $1 trillion every year. And I initially looked at that $1 trillion. I just thought, you know, what a stupid number. How the hell do you come up with a lovely round $1 trillion? You know, it just seemed not in any way credible.
I think one of us wrote next to it in the notes for a previous episode, like really, in brackets.
Yes, it was. You're right. It was in a previous episode, wasn't it? And I think that was really actually the sort of linchpin for going and looking at it, because I'm a sad individual. I thought, well, let's go and look at what's behind that number. And that was sort of one of the starting thought process actually for writing that talk for P2B Expo. The digging was interesting on that one, because when you actually try and put that $1 trillion into some context, first up, it actually equates to less than 5% of the annual reported revenues for Fortune 500 companies combined. So 500 companies in the US, $1 trillion is less than 5% of their revenue, which I just think is wild. And in a way, actually, in a something that's maybe is even more out there, is that it's actually less than 2.8% of the contribution to the US economy, to US GDP of private companies, which tells you two things, actually, which is that how big the Fortune 500 are as a percentage of the total number of organizations in the US, but also it tells you that fundamentally $1 trillion actually isn't that much money, you know, when set in that context. And when you kind of look at the study and you start picking into like, how did they get to that calculation? Again, there are lots of sources, there are lots of studies, and there isn't a huge degree of alignment here, but you look at some of the ones that they use and you can triangulate them against other well-respected studies. The figure that they've used is that well-aligned sales and marketing teams generate 208% more revenue from marketing source leads. So that, you know, that is a significant driver of that number. They get stuff from their marketing, 2x plus. They're 67% better at closing and generate 10% more revenue overall. So you look at the figures and you look at the $1 trillion figure and you realize that actually that $1 trillion is probably quite conservative. The prize, as we talked about, is probably bigger. It's probably double that. And that's in the US. You extrapolate that over EMEA, shrink that down into a market like the UK to sort of right size it for the total economic output. It's massive. It's a properly massive number. I mean, if we just pick one figure out of that and say 10% more revenue overall, like, just by nailing sales and marketing alignment, and I sort of paused on that figure for a second, you could increase your revenue by 10%. Now, if you're a seed phase startup, 10% maybe doesn't sound very exciting, but this study was based on mature organizations, large scale organizations. 10% is huge. In a scrappy startup, I mean, it's probably, you probably add a zero to that. Just because they don't know what they're doing to start with, because no one does when they're in that first stage of like trying to prove value and trying to build processes and trying to scale them. Use it as heuristic, but I think that the data suggests that the opportunity is huge, whatever number you put on that. And that's only counting the financial cost, the financial gain. Misaligned teams hurt customer experience. They hurt retention rates. They hurt employee experience. They hurt customer lifetime value. When marketing and sales aren't joined up and, they're handing over half-baked stuff to sales, sales isn't following it up, information isn't being transferred, all the same questions are being answered again by the prospect, like, that is a rubbish experience. And that is obviously what is driving these numbers, right? 67% better at closing. Well, we're actually just delivering a better, more joined up experience where we're understanding the value being sought by the prospect better by having a better understanding of the total journey. It stands to reason that, you're going to close better if you do that. If you actually follow up on the leads that are being sent from marketing because they actually have some value because you've connected on what they're supposed to be in the first place, 2xing the revenue you're getting from marketing source leads, again, seems probably pretty conservative. You can see where the numbers come from. And I think that's quite exciting. And it was why I wanted to kind of lean into that in the talk that we that we did, and you know why I thought it was absolutely worth talking about it again on the podcast today.
Yeah, and at this point, once you start going into these numbers, suddenly all the phones come out and everyone's like taking photos of your slides.
They were.
And it's a great point about actually, I wonder if that number's, that $1 trillion number's probably not thinking about the lifetime customer value. Like, what's the difference in a lifetime, the customer lifetime value, sorry, if they're having this joined up, aligned experience with you, then it's probably going to be the, you know, it's going to be vastly more than 10% of an increase, I would imagine.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. No, the study was just looking at total contract value.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a simplistic metric sort of thing. So it's probably a lot more.
Yeah.
So obviously, like, this is one of the biggest opportunities that most businesses have out there without actually really, you know, it's not necessarily connected to how many leads you can generate or how many more customers you can win. It's kind of about fixing what you do within the organization. I guess the next place that we should go with this is to figure out, well, where does all this misalignment come from? Like, if it's so, if it's such a big problem and we're hemorrhaging or just leaving so much money on the table, like, why does it happen?
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's the, well, the $1 trillion question. In a nutshell, it's from siloed thinking, in all ways, in all means, in all places. You know, businesses, as we have talked about many times before on this podcast, are complex human systems. Their purpose is to create value. And in the systems thinking world, as we've talked about before, we call this value an emergent behavior. So what we're really talking about here is that every part of the business working together to form the whole to create value for the customers, you know, that is this sort of more than the sum of its parts thing that we've talked about before when talking about emergent behavior. And the thing with siloed thinking is that standard business practice says that whilst typically a top-down strategy probably exists, you know, there will be a vision and there will be a number that has been set for the next year. All of the goal setting, all of the budgeting, all of the strategy happens within functional teams. And it happens in blissful isolation from all the other functional teams in the complex system that we exist in. And that strategy and those budgets and those goals get reported back up the chain of command for approval. It is completely normal in most businesses to totally abdicate responsibility for alignment to management teams, to senior management teams. And of course, they don't do that because what they're trying to do is fill a spreadsheet in that makes some sort of sense. You know, this siloed thinking is endemic in most businesses. It is a sort of standard business practice. I don't think there's even necessarily a recognition that there is any other way of doing it. And of course there is. But the problem with this siloed thinking is that it creates what we call goal conflict. And that's a concept, again, that we've talked about on the podcast before. But essentially, what goal conflict is not thinking about horizontal alignment predominantly. So businesses are typically really good at vertical alignment, you know, that reporting up the chain of command, you know, do all of the numbers add up so that we're going to get to whatever the big number is you told us we needed to get to by the end of the year? You know, what are we going to spend to get that? How does that compare to last year? Very, very sort of verticalized thinking in terms of how we align to goals and plans. But what businesses are typically really bad at is checking horizontal alignment. So this is where goal conflict comes from. And it's one of the main reasons for organizational misalignment. You know, it is the byproduct of the siloed thinking. It is the emergent behavior of the siloed thinking, if you like. And goal conflict ultimately is when two or more seemingly sensible goals, like generating X number of MQLs per month and sales generating a X percent conversion rate from initial conversation to opportunity, or simply generate, you know, however many quid by the end of the month, simply don't work together. And it's such a common thing to see, you know, sales and marketing setting their targets, setting their goals, setting their KPIs completely in isolation from each other, thinking that they are both doing the same thing because they're both working towards the same however many millions number they've been set by the senior team. They are both doing their best and doing good work to do the best thing that they can do in their team to get to the number, but they're not thinking about how it stitches together. And of course, in that example that I just gave, generate X number of MQLs, if that's a lot of MQLs, and the goal of conversion rate from initial conversation to opportunity is going to be a key metric driving behaviors in the sales team, then funny enough, you're not going to follow up on many MQLs because you're trying to hit your conversion rate number. So you're only going to hit the things that you think are going to support the number. You know, we've talked about that before as a sort of systems archetype, but it really is this one example, I believe, that is the root cause of sales marketing misalignment in many organizations. And of course, this isn't really new news, is it? You know, we've talked about it on the podcast before, but it's a lived experience of most people that work in sales and marketing. You know, I'm sure everyone that's listening to the podcast has experienced it in some way, shape, or form. But the problem is that nothing changes. And it's because in business, we're taught to be reductionist thinkers. You know, we use phrases like, let's break this down or let's unpack the problem. You know, it's such a normal behavior that much like this sort of siloed approach to goal setting, we don't even question it. And it's this completely normalized business behavior of solving problems by like chunking them down to their smallest possible component parts that causes the siloed thinking in the first place. It's the reason that, I guess it's the reason that when we've got a problem in sales and marketing teams, we fix it by trying to fix a component. You know, we replace the CMO, we hire a new agency, we switch out a bit of software. You know, we're hunting solutions down by changing elements and not thinking about the system. And obviously for fans of the podcast, you already know what I'm going to say next, is that, you know, this is the opposite of systems thinking. It's in systems thinking, we understand that behaviors, whether they're positive or negative, are actually the byproduct of the relationship between all the elements in the system, the component parts. And it's the component parts that most businesses say we need to boil things down to so they don't look at the relationships. And it's these kind of interconnections that create the emergence. And it's really this that is driving misalignment. It is a lack of focus on the things that are actually connecting the bits in the system, in simple terms. So it's kind of natural that if you try to keep solving business problems by breaking the solution down into component parts, like what are marketing doing and what are sales doing, then you're going to leave yourself wide open for goal conflict. And you're going to bake misalignment into the processes that you're using. So in a nutshell, that's where misalignment comes from. But I think the other culprit that we've got to kind of highlight here as well is short-term targets. Short-termism and setting monthly targets is the single stupidest but equally completely logical thing that almost all businesses do. It's a sort of paradoxical relationship, and it's due to the fact that whilst it's essential for businesses to set targets and to measure their attainment across the year, the very act of doing so is likely to be hurting their ability to actually achieve the targets. And the reason for this is that people do what they're measured on, a concept we've talked about on the podcast a few times before. If you measure and particularly compensate people on achieving monthly targets, then they're always going to have their eyes down, focusing on what they can do to close this month. And they're not going to be developing long-term opportunities. And this is never more of a problem than it is in long sales cycle B2B organizations where we spend most of our time. And it is basically the reason why that 79% of MQLs never convert to opportunities that I mentioned earlier. It's that salespeople aren't incentivized, or in many cases even given the time to go and develop those things, or it's contrary to some other goal that they've got. It's conflicting with, you know, as I mentioned earlier, something like a conversion rate goal.
It's a good point. You may very well have goal conflict with two. Yeah, I might have two conflicting goals that are just your own personal goals within the within the organization, not just misaligned between sales and marketing, but you may have sort of two conflicting priorities. Absolutely.
And it's this sort of, the solution is holism. The solution, of course, is thinking about things as a system, as we always implore people to do on the podcast. And really, the way that we kick that off is with shared goals, and that's what a lot of the talk was about. And I guess we can unpack a bit now.
Actually, this is another point where people are getting their phones out and taking photos of your slides, because it's like, oh wait, there is actually a solution out there, and I guess you see the heads nodding. So, like all good ideas, this seems obvious. It's like, well, if it's so obvious, why are we in this position? But yeah, go ahead. Shared goals is certainly foundational to the whole thing.
It's such a good point, isn't it? Because it, like most good solutions to problems, it is really obvious when you think about it. But it doesn't happen. You know, I think it's a strange thing. And it's just that baked in siloed thinking. But yeah, shared goals. So, I mean, shared goals and cross-functional teaming to a degree, which I know are not necessarily the same thing, but getting connected, you know, whether that is by bringing the sales and marketing team to become one team, or whether it is just being really good at having two distinct teams that are working on the same thing, that is the key to success. It's not by having meetings to talk about stuff, it's to genuinely be working on the same stuff. And that's the sort of jumping off point for the sort of concept of shared goals being a big part of the answer here. You know, it's my personal opinion that in long sales cycle B2B, the concept of sales and marketing being two distinct teams with two distinct lines of reporting to the board is totally outdated, and it is one of the things that drives the wedge between the two teams when they should really be acting as one. And shared goals, or the concept of shared goals as a way of kind of creating cross-functional teams, if you are accepting that you can't necessarily make that big move all in one go and just bring it into one team with one single line of report to the board, it's a great way to actually bring sellers and marketers together, because what it does is get you on the path to genuine alignment. And there's a fairly simple kind of five-step process that we use with our consultancy engagements for setting shared goals. And that is to start off with setting what we term a North Star metric. Now, shared goals can take many forms. In fact, we've done entire podcasts just on goal setting before, and I'm sure we'll unpack them again because there's so much to talk about. But setting a kind of North Star metric, something that everyone can actually get behind, can play a really, really significant role in setting goals that are actually meaningful across the growth team. So when we talk about a North Star metric, you can use revenue for that, but it's almost always better if you don't, and you use instead something that is actually sort of understandable, is tangible, and something that we often recommend is something like the number of good fit new accounts won, or the number of good sort of good fit accounts engaged with or engaged in marketing activity, or whatever it might be. Something that can be counted in terms of human engagement, I think, is always a really strong place to start. Because what you can then do is have a really meaningful conversation as a team of determining the drivers that help you actually achieve that North Star goal. And, you know, that could be the number of opportunities, the number of conversations, the number of engaged accounts, you know, average number of engaged stakeholders per account, whatever. But you start creating a set of drivers that really are actions, and they're actions that you can attach metrics to, and they're actions that you can attach ownership to. And that's really, really key. So you go about this sort of process of setting the North Star metric together. You go about the process of collaboratively working out what the drivers are. And then you set some sub-goals for each one of those drivers. And they need to be based on, ideally, performance levels that are actually achievable. But that's probably another story. And once you've got this sort of stack of goals, you've got the North Star metric, you've got the drivers, you've attached a metric to each one of those goals, then you can actually go about building out a strategy for achieving those sub-metrics that will actually ladder up to the North Star. And they can, you know, make sure that you've actually baked in an approach for achieving those goals and sort of optimizing towards them. And I think this is a really, really key thing, that you reframe the planning process. You get everyone aligned behind the same thing. You get them to collaborate on what's going to the drivers of achieving that. And then you ideate together in terms of how you build that plan. And you can already, I think, see whether this is a particular process that you would subscribe to or not, that it is a process that is fundamentally different to the process used by most sales and marketing organizations, because it is about collaboration from day dot. And it is about building a goal stack, you know, building a sort of set of KPIs and a sort of ownership of those KPIs that is inherently shared from day one. And that is the building block that we can start moving forward with that drives true alignment. So, you know, that sort of set of shared goals and stacking that up together is clearly a great way to reframe the sort of goal setting process and to kind of create a process that engineers out too much potential for goal conflict. But I think the other thing that you've really got to think about as going through this sort of goal setting process is time horizons. Now, it's quite a contentious issue, I think, this. It's one that we've talked about a little bit before. But I'm a great believer that monthly sales targets, monthly quotas, are really not very helpful unless you have a business that has a sales cycle that's shorter than 30 days. Because what it does, as I mentioned earlier, is just put everyone's eyes down on the end of the month. And you move away from achieving long-term value. You move away from kind of building towards larger sort of value-driven goals. You kind of lose focus on some of those North Star metrics because you're just under the cosh to go do a monthly number. So as part of that sort of building out a new framework of measurement, you've got to think about the time for measurement as well. And I think the quarterly targets is a good compromise, but you know, half yearly, maybe even annual. I think that you've got to fit what's right for your organization, but it's got to be what's right based on what is going to drive the right behaviors, not what is what you've done previously, because those two things are likely to be misaligned themselves. But what I would suggest is kind of map the time horizon to average sales cycle, or at least to a target sales cycle, and really track the behaviors that it is creating within the team, certainly with respect to the interface between the output of marketing and the sort of inputs of sales. And that, I think, is really in relation to targets. Measurement is a whole different thing. You know, measurement and targets are probably defined by the fact that targets typically are what we get paid on and what we get upset about when we miss. But measurement is there to use to inform optimization, and measurement really can be as frequent as you need it to be. You know, in our organization, we use a sort of weekly balance scorecard approach, but it's driven by dashboards and data that are fed and live 24/7. But really, the important thing with measurement is that it needs to be as automated as possible. It needs to be measuring things that genuinely drive optimization, by which I mean, you know, making decisions about what you do and don't do going forward. And I think if you can start getting that goal structure right, and you can start getting the time for delivery, the, you know, the framework of measurement, the structure of targets right, you know, it just sets you up on this incredible path to being aligned almost by default. But you got to get there. And I think that's, you know, that's the next thing that we talked about, is the sort of building this operating system around the growth team.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point to really get into the operating system side of things, like that you need to build an operating system effectively.
Absolutely. You know, this is something that we focus on a lot in the business. You know, we have our own framework for this, which we call Imaginatively Enough Growth Team OS. You know, if anyone wants a copy of that, happy to share, you know, message us on socials or something. But ultimately, the operating system is there to make sure that you achieve the goals, pure and simple. You know, having goals set and measured and targeted over the right time horizons is a great point, but you need to actually achieve them to do the number, whatever that number is. And this is where you need to build out an operating system for the growth team. And the sort of key attributes, I guess, the kind of the key outtakes in terms of building an operating system, is that you need a clear system for managing that goal attainment. And this means that you need to have clear goals and clear metrics, and crucially, clear ownership of those metrics and goals. You need to have a sort of regular meeting cadence, just to not just to kind of go through, you know, what's everyone doing, you know, show and tell, but actually to go through the metrics that everyone owns, and to understand, are they on track, are they off track, and actually have a meaningful, proactive discussion in the team about solutioning, about how you fix them. You know, we do this within our own structure, and we call that part of the meeting IDS, which is, I think, I always gone out of my head, identify, discuss, and solve. You know, it's the sort of, we've got this issue, let's get all the brains in the room and let's try and fix this as a team. And that's a really key thing that kind of flips the purpose of those meetings from being a sit around the table, drink coffee, and, you know, talk about what a good job we're all doing and go away again, to actually driving that concept of shared ownership.
In order to do that IDS, but you need to have engineered out the goal conflict in the first place. Otherwise, the way that people with sort of different roles will interact to try and solve a problem may not be in the common interest, because of course it can't be, because we have a goal conflict sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's only possible to have that system if we've achieved the deconflicting of the goals.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that, you know, that is such a key point, that if the goal stack's not right in the first place, then actually the operating system will be operating you towards the wrong goals. You know, that is a sort of systems issue we've talked about before, you know, wrong goal archetype. So that is something that, yeah, it's a really, really key point. Another thing which I think is really crucial within the operating system is ensuring that the data that's driving reporting on goal attainment is clean and easy to access for everybody involved. So we have complete data transparency, and that it's being driven by a really well-integrated tech stack, so that it is being fed as close to live as possible. You know, it's not, the data isn't all owned by some data team, you know, insight team, that are having to pull stuff together for reports. Everyone needs to see the key metrics all the time, and they need to see whether they're on track, because, you know, we're going to talk about self-organization in a second, and that's a really key thing in terms of making sure everyone can do the course corrections themselves, you know, that can understand how they are doing, because they want to be on track for the next meeting. They want to be on track for the next milestone. And you need to be able to show them whether they're on track or not. And I think finally, within this kind of iOS, you need to have an agile mindset. You know, we've talked about the sort of set and forget trap on a previous episode. I think that's a really key point here, that, you need to have this mindset that nothing is set and forget, you know, not even the goals themselves. You know, to your point, if you're pointing at the wrong goal, then you're orientating the system in the wrong direction. So you need to be prepared to kind of change anything, to kind of create a culture of continuous improvement and collaboration that's interwoven into the system that you've kind of built for the team. So we've got the goals right, hopefully. We've got the alignment around the time horizons. We've built an operating system for achieving them. You know, you can really see how you can create meaningful alignment like this. And it kind of brings us to the, I guess, the final big systems concept. And this is self-organization. Self-organization is a concept that describes the capacity of the system, or at least the group of elements within that system, to organize themselves spontaneously without the need for central authority or external control. Ultimately, it is the ability for the system to adapt and to make decisions and regulate its own activities autonomously. And it's got to do that based on the interactions and the relationships between all the components within the system. So you can see already that this sort of spontaneous organization is really driven by that operating system, is driven by those well-aligned goals, because everyone's in it together. Everyone knows where they're trying to get to. They know what the North Star is. And the self-organization principle is just that sort of course correction. It's everyone knowing where they're trying to get to and being able to have the authority to start, you know, deviating from whatever course that they're on if that course isn't going to get them to where they're trying to get to. And that's a really, really key principle in driving genuine alignment, because it's all well and good kicking off a project and everyone being aligned, but stuff never goes to plan. So if you don't have a self-organizing team, you don't have a sort of self-organization enabled within the system that you've built, then, you know, the cracks will start. You know, you will start deviating from the point of alignment as things go forward. So you need the ability to course correct. And in businesses, as we've said before, you know, businesses are goal-seeking systems. They orientate themselves towards achieving the goals that are set. And therefore, the shared goals that I've been talking about, that sort of North Star, is there for the system, the business, to orientate itself towards. And that sort of shared goal stack is the starting point for self-organizations within teams and, you know, within your business. And really effective teams have the autonomy to arrive at solutions that are maybe unexpected, you know, maybe are more innovative. But they can really only be effective in this autonomy if you kind of create some simple rules, if you create the guardrails, I guess we would call it, within the team. So there's a balance to be struck. You know, you can't just say, get on with it, do whatever you like, spend whatever you like. You could do that, I suppose. And you know what? It might work great, but I think you need that sort of governance in place. And, you know, the rules that you need to apply to a growth team focus on the links between people predominantly. So it's how they kind of, we sort of need to govern the interactions, if you like, because as we've talked about before, the interactions is where the emergence comes from predominantly. So my kind of top three recommendations in kind of creating guardrails within this sort of self-organizing team would be to create what we call an accountability chart. So this can look a bit like an org chart, but it doesn't actually have to be hierarchical. What it's there for is to list people's roles, list what they're responsible for delivering, list what metrics they are accountable for within that shared plan that you've built, and often actually to record their sort of devolved decision making, you know, maybe you'd call it, you know, what they can make decisions about, you know, those sort of guardrails. So how much flex have they got? What are they on the hook for delivering? What is it they're actually supposed to be doing, and what are they responsible for? just the process of writing that down and structuring it through the cult growth team is a really powerful exercise, because not only does it make it very, very clear for every member of that team what they need to be doing, and to some degree, you know, what flex they've got to kind of make their own decisions in getting there, but it also uncovers gaps very often in terms of, okay, well, this person can't own all those metrics. That's unrealistic. So how do those get split out? Maybe we don't have enough people. This person's role is too big. They're going to be pulled in too many different directions, or simply there's just no one to own this bit of the plan. So that accountability chart is a really powerful tool in kind of building out that that sort of structure and understanding of how is the plan going to get delivered. I'm also a huge advocate, and this is a dimension within that sort of growth team OS that I talked about, that you really need to invest in people, not just as the professional self, but the whole self, and creating a culture of kind of learning and shaping things like personal development plans to build expertise in the things that you need to have an effective team that's going to deliver a strategy. And that is quite a broad church, in my opinion. And I think this is maybe we're sort of straying into the realms of a HR podcast here, and I'm sure maybe HR people would maybe disagree with me and have an interesting point of view here. But I really think that personal development plans need to be more than just about what professional skills do I need. You know, they can be about the functioning of the team. So self-work, you know, inner work, I think is just as important as kind of professional development there. And I think if you bake that culture of learning and development into the team structure and into the operating system, you can achieve great things. And I think the final point really is about creating a culture of what I would term tactical autonomy. So it's giving the team the power to sort of pivot and try new things. And one of the ways that I really like for doing that is creating a sort of internal pitching process. So if someone's got a new idea, you know, they've got an idea they think is going to get them to the North Star or to their metric or what they're accountable for, then, you know, having a process whereby they pitch that within growth team meetings, they put the case forward, and ultimately that they get sponsorship and subscription to that from across the team, so that you can continue having this collaborative development, this collaborative delivery of new ideas and trialing stuff and optimizing. So I think that that's covered the main points there. But yeah, just maybe as a very brief recap. Misalignment is a huge issue. It is costing, well, trillions probably to the global economy. There is a sort of org level opportunity to generate significantly more revenue by nailing this, certainly significantly more revenue from marketing generated leads. And the way to do that ultimately is to unify your team behind shared goals and a shared operating system that is there to sort of drive this principle of self-organization, so teams can kind of really genuinely work as one and course correct their way through to the sort of innovative solutions that are going to help you achieve your goals in the long term. So hopefully we did a reasonable job there of painting the picture that we did with a bit more visual aid at the B2B Expo recently, and maybe we do some summing up.
Thanks for that, Chris. I know I've put a lot of the efforts had to come from you on this one, but it was about your wonderful talk at the Expo. But a big outtake that I've really had is that there's a big mindset shift that needs to happen within organizations in order to really kind of capitalize on this fantastic opportunity. And that's, you need to start to see misalignment as a cultural sort of pathology, not a tactical nuisance. So yeah. that trillion-dollar plus, or maybe trillions of dollars misalignment figure. It's not just an attention-grabbing statistic, although admittedly it was quite effective as that, but it actually underscores this systemic pathology. So when misalignment's the default state, it's really reflecting a deeper cultural issue, and we've got leadership tolerating, or let's face it, probably incentivizing local wins that may well be at the cost of system health. And it's not just a matter of sort of tweaking the funnel and adding more leads. It's about asking whether your company's actual organizing principles, and it could be monthly targets or siloed budgets or narrowly defined success metrics, whether these are actively sabotaging your growth. And we've talked about some of those issues before. I think the real insight is correcting misalignment isn't like a, it's not a project. it's a cultural intervention, if that's not being too dramatic. It's about changing not just how people collaborate, but like what the organization actually deems to be valuable over time. And I guess having a system to define that value. And I'll probably for once leave my sort of final summing up thoughts to that for today.
Yes. I mean, I think it's such a good point. And it's one that we didn't really touch on today, but it's a dimension within the sort of growth team operating system that we deploy within our clients' organizations is values. You know, values alignment is such an important thing, because if you build a culture of trust and tactical autonomy, you build a culture of learning, you know, you build a culture of generating long-term value, then the sort of things that we've talked about as being the negatives, you know, short-term targets, eyes down, you know, siloed thinking, they become culturally incompatible. So actually, you know, your point about kind of culture and the sort of way that you frame values to drive culture within the org is so critical. And I think it's such an interesting point that maybe we should expand on in another episode.
If that is all from you, I think that's probably about all we've got time for this week.
I think so. Yeah.
We're actually going to come in at under an hour this time after a couple of long episodes.
Amazing. Well, yes, I think that probably is all we've got time for. And I think that we've had the opportunity, I guess, to talk a lot more in a bit more detail about what's been going on today. But it raises some really interesting questions. I think as we're doing our 2025 kind of content plan for the podcast, I think, you know, looking at the role of culture in kind of shaping systems is one that I'd be really interested to talk about.
Yeah, very often when we get to that summing up part of the episode, we end up coming up with the topics for future episodes as they just kind of organically come out of that part of the discussion, which is, I guess, how it's meant to work as a system, I guess. Okay, so it's a nice kickoff to the growth system for 2025, but that's all we've got time for this one. So the growth system is brought to you by RevSpace, that's us, an applied growth consultancy that connects B2B organizations with the future of growth, consultancy and education and applied delivery services. Don't forget to follow and rate the podcast. It really helps us to bring the content to a wider audience, and we would really appreciate a moment of your time to tell us what you think. Feedback's always valuable, and in fact, what led to this particular episode. Thank you very much. See you next time.
Thanks, everyone.